Welcome to this class on money and trust. Here we analyze and discuss teachings from the sages who can give us a clearer understanding of giving and receiving. The sages quoted here are Nachmanides, Rabbi Nachman, Rabbi Simon Jacobson, and Rabbi Dov Ber Pinson. PDFs of their quoted texts can be downloaded from this website. Now, whenever we speak of God in this class or in all of Judaism, we're really speaking about the invisible consciousness of the entire universe, which we consider to be the source and continuous support of all life. I was researching money and finding out what the Jewish perspective really is, and what kept coming up was charity, you know, you have to give money, people are always asking for money, people are honored for money, they have these dinners where they're honored for money, and some people resent that. But I wanted to go deeper into money to see what it really is that Jews are talking about when they talk about money. Because that's the surface. And when you go underneath on the spiritual level, you see it in a different way. So I want to quote first something I haven't given you, because I've sort of realized this was in there later. Something from Nachmanides, from the letter he wrote to his son. He said, "For indeed, of what should man be prideful? If he has wealth, it is Hashem who makes one poor or prosperous." This is the basic Jewish understanding, is that God has all the money. This is what my late rabbi Shlomo Carlbach said, that God has all the money, and it's God who makes us rich or makes us poor. And we have to learn whatever the lessons are within that state of being. So what we need to know is to know how to trust God in that God has all the money. Learning to trust that God is teaching us something that we need to know about money. So if you go to the yellow sheet and you look at the first couple of pieces here, King David in a song says, "Trust in God." Hi. Hi, come on in. Give him one of these. So we're talking about money. And on that yellow sheet, the King David is saying, "Trust in God and do good, that you may dwell in the land and nourish yourself with faithfulness, and rely upon God for your enjoyments, for he will grant you the desires of your heart." So not only does God have the money, but God will give it to you if you desire it or if you need it. And Proverbs is saying, trust, I'm going to go into this more deeply. "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he shall direct your paths." So even though we're talking about money, it's still part of the universe and it's still part of our world, and we still have to trust God even with money. God's in charge of the money and we're not.
A lot of people might want to have a long conversation with what happened with Madoff.
You know, unfortunately, people are sometimes, they think they're being observant because they're following the laws, but they're not following the essence of the laws. That's the difference. They're not following the deeper meaning of the laws. So this is something from Deuteronomy, from Moses. And then we'll go into this in more detail. "Who feeds you manna in the wilderness, which your forefathers knew not, in order to afflict you and in order to test you, to do good for you in your end? And you may," that's supposed to be "may, say in your heart, my strength and the might of my hand made me all this wealth. Then you shall remember God your God, that it was he who gave you the strength to make wealth in order to establish his covenant that he swore to your forefathers as this day. So this is quite a handful of things that we have to start to understand. He's saying God is giving you what you need. Manna is what you need. So God is giving you manna. God is giving you what you need in the wilderness, in the place of your life that you're not sure where you're going, what you're doing, or even if you do think you know where you're going or what you're doing. We're all going through the wilderness. We don't know what's happening next. We don't know where we're going to get to. I mean, we don't know what's happening the next day or the next week. We may make plans, but nothing is guaranteed. So God is in charge of everything. When God will give you the manna, what you need in your life. And he's saying, which your forefathers knew not. Forefathers in the wilderness, when they got into the desert. In order to afflict you and in order to test you. So this is another part of the process, that you're being challenged. There's so much in this piece. I can't get it all out at once, so please be patient with me. I'm trying to explain it. Yeah. So God is giving us what we need. The manna is what we need. In the wilderness, which is our general life, where God gives us what we need. And that is the Judaic understanding, that God will give you what you need when you live in harmony with God. That's basically the Judaic understanding. So, in order to afflict you and in order to test you, to do God good for you in the end. So what God is doing is teaching us how to live in the world. And when we do the right thing, when we do what God wants, when we follow the halakhic laws, when we live in a way that honors our fellow Jew, our fellow people, our neighbors, as ourselves, then we will have what we need. So when we don't do that, if we don't do that, then we are challenged. Life doesn't flow so easily. When we live in harmony with God, God gives us what we need. When we don't live in harmony with God, when we say, I'm going to do it my way, my ego is more important than what the Torah is saying, what the halakhic laws are saying, and all those laws are guiding us to live in harmony with the universe. So when we decide we're not going to live in harmony with the universe, it's my life and I'm going to live it the way I want, then we're going to bump into things all the way along because we're not living in the flow of the higher consciousness of life, which is God. So he's saying, in order to test you, so the test is, are you living in harmony with God? Or do you have this ego that is getting in the way of succeeding in life, of accomplishing what you feel you need to do in the world? And the test can also be, sometimes even if you're doing good in the world, it might not be so easy to follow through. Obstacles come in the way. Things don't quite work out. To stay with the program, even though it looks impossible, you give up, you don't know how it's going to work, you just have to
hang in.
Keep going with it. Yeah, hang in. You have to stay with the program no matter what, as long as you know it's what you're supposed to do. If you're doing something damaging, it's not such a good idea.
Hopefully you start to get the message.
Yeah. And the thing is, if you don't live in a way that's in harmony with what we're told to do, in a way of in harmony with the universe, obstacles start to come in that stop you. And sometimes it's just things hurt. Sometimes you'll stub your toe. Sometimes you'll bang your head. Sometimes there'll be obstacles that will come in, physical obstacles, or people will just say no to you. they won't allow you to do what you want to do because it's not in harmony with what you're meant to do. So the trick is to tune into what you're meant to do, to find out how to live in harmony with God. And as we said before in this class, meditating, tuning into the higher consciousness of God, understanding that God is present within each one of us all the time. And Judaism keeps saying there's a divine spark within every one of us, right? So when we learn to tune into that divine spark, we live in harmony with what is. So God is testing us, not to prove us wrong, but to make sure we got it right. And if we don't know what we have to do, we have to ask, because we will be shown what we need to do. We have to come into relationship with God. And we can do that through prayers, but even more so we can do that through meditation and prayers. And it's very healing and opens up a lot within us. Okay. And it says after that, to do good for you in the end. So it's really meant for good. It's not that God is testing you to prove you wrong. God wants to prove you right. You know, God wants you to get it. If you don't get it, it'll keep coming back and keep coming back, right?
Until you get the message.
Until you get it, and it'll block you more and more. You'll have obstacles, you'll have restraints, you'll have difficulties until you get it. People have relationships with the wrong person, then they go off and they have another relationship with another person who's also wrong for them. It gets harder and harder. And they say, why do I keep getting this from someone? Because they haven't grown, because they haven't found out what's going on inside of them. So if you don't work on yourself, which is what Judaism is all about, is getting more and more enlightened. If you don't work on yourself, then you can't grow. You'll keep making the same mistakes over and over again. So it's important to find out more and more about yourself. And meditation gives you that insight. And prayer gives you that insight, but not as much as meditation. Meditation is listening, and you're listening to the higher self within you. Prayer is speaking to God. So then they say, and you may say in your heart, my strength and the might of my hand made me all this wealth. Then you shall remember God, your God, that it was God who gave you the strength to make wealth in order to establish his covenant. So it's God who's giving you the wealth, it's God who's giving you the strength to make the wealth. You know, you can say, but I did this, I found this out, I worked on myself, I learned more about what I needed to know. If we say, I made this, I did this, I accomplished this, we can't do that. Because who made us? Who made us in the first place? Who gave us the intelligence we have? Who gave us the parents we have? Who gave us the ancestors we have? Our grandparents, our great-grandparents, that made who we are? Who did all that? It was God, right? So
obstacles that made us look deeper and all that.
Yeah. I know people keep saying that to me when I say, oh, but it's God. Yeah, but who gave you the problem in the first place? Okay, but we're here to learn. The whole purpose of being here is that we are conscious beings to learn about the higher consciousness and then live in relationship with the higher consciousness. The messianic promise is always we're each going to have a relationship with God. So that's the plan. It's, you know, the Jews have been saying this for thousands of years now. That's the plan, that we have a relationship with God. And that, see, we have forms of consciousness. We're born as forms of consciousness. We're really forms of consciousness in a human body. And God is a form of consciousness without a physical body. But is the expanse of the universe. So we each have part of this consciousness of God within us. And what we have to do is that even though we're in a physical body, we have to have a relationship with the higher consciousness. We have to use our consciousness to connect to the higher consciousness. We don't deny our physical body. We have to take care of the physical body because that's the only container we have for the consciousness of God. Each one of us is like a little DNA part of God. So we have to understand that we're simply these forms of consciousness, and God has formed us as unique beings, each one of us totally unique, so that we can be in relationship with God. It's amazing, isn't it, that we're made as smaller forms of consciousness, and we couldn't possibly know all that God knows because we're restrained by these bodies. We can't go out into space unless we're in a spaceship, but we can't normally see to the other side of the world. We can't expand our brain to, you know, to understand everything that's going on, or all knowledge, or all information, because God has that. God is that kind of consciousness, and we're physical containers with our limited consciousness. And the whole point is that we are learning from the higher consciousness to be in relationship with God's consciousness, and so we're not so limited as physical beings. We can start to transcend into a clearer awareness of what God is able to show us. We can't know everything God knows, because obviously God is way beyond us in that. But we can start to understand the relationship of one thing to another, of how we affect people, how we can interact with people in a way that's beneficial for us and beneficial for the other people too. So, all right. So, any questions of this?
You know, I was just thinking of when Moses goes up to Mount Sinai the second time and he's asking for forgiveness, and he sees God's going to forgive him, and he says, okay, now I'm asking for an extra favor. I want to see you. And God says, no one can see me fully.
Yeah.
And live.
That's it. You can only see my back, God says.
Yeah.
And that is very clear, that you can't see God coming. You can't see what God's going to do for you before it happens. It's only after the fact that you can see what God is doing for you. That's what that means. That you can only see God's back because you can only see after the event. You know, you can't see beforehand. You don't know. I don't know how Elijah knew that God was going to make the bull burn, you know, just like that. I don't know if he knew that that was going to happen. But most of us, if we're not prophets, we don't know what's going to happen next. But after the fact, we can see, ah, so God was in that. That, look at that, all the coincidences that happen, all the things that fall into place, right?
Yeah, I know you were saying, because we thought, a man's looking back on his life and he's relating to God and he's saying, you know, how good it is to walk with you. But then he says, like, he pictures us on the beach, but he says, you know, but I have a vision of us and I see us walking side by side, but sometimes I see only one set of footprints.
Yes.
And it's the places, it's the times when it was the toughest times in my life. And I don't understand why you'd leave me alone then.
Yeah.
And the response is, I didn't leave you alone. That's my picture up and carried you.
Yeah, I was carrying you. It's beautiful. That's beautiful. And it's true, when you go through difficulties, God is right there with you. Even if you don't know that. And I've had people say to me not so long ago, someone said, God's not here, God's not here. And I'm going, yeah, God's right there with you all the time. And then later on he said, it's amazing how it all worked out. I said, because God was with you. So
It's I mean, I hear what you're saying, but then, you know, then what about the people that suffered with terrible disasters like Katrina and stuff like that? I mean, what you're saying wouldn't rub to people that suffered a terrible disaster like that. Where was God then, you see? And all the terrible disasters that happened mm-hmm. in the world and tsunamis mm-hmm. and 9/11 and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a huge question mark about
yeah.
that.
But I'm not God. I can't tell
right,
you why
right,
they
right,
happen.
Right. No, I'm just playing devil's advocate, you know.
I understand, well.
It's like, why is there suffering in the world?
Well, the
how do we know?
Simple answering is that when you live in harmony with God, God protects you.
Yeah.
But even then, you don't know for sure what's going to happen next. Maybe you've done what you needed to do in the world and you're taken. I don't know. But the whole thing is to know that if you understand this process, if you understand having a relationship with God, and you start to see God in your life, you will experience joy. You will experience the love of God. And it's much more likely that you will be protected. Much more likely.
Yeah.
Okay? So, you know, there are Israeli soldiers, they're Orthodox soldiers. Never sometimes don't make it. So, I, you know, you can't spell it out. But we're coming to a time when prayers are not even enough.
Where prayers?
Prayers are not even enough. Because if you don't understand, as we talked before, the essence of the prayers, the essence of the relationship with God, it has to be a close one. It has to be a personal one with God. If you don't understand that, then you're just almost speaking to the air. You're just mouthing it off, but you're not meaning it. You're not understanding the depth of it. And to understand the depth of it, you have to make a great commitment to yourself and to God. And you have to take yourself seriously, and you'd have to take God seriously. And you have to keep your sense of humor as you're doing it. So it's not as if you have to be serious all the time. But you have to be real about yourself. You have to be real about God. And then it says, then you shall remember God your God, that it was He who gave you the strength to make wealth in order to establish His covenant. His covenant is the relationship that you have with God. The covenant is the covenant. It's often the Ten Commandments are called the covenant, but it's also, the covenant is like a contract. You're making a deal with God. God will give you what you need, and you have to experience the presence of God and do what God wants. And the reason God wants you to do certain things is so that you will live in harmony with the universe. God is basically teaching us how to live in harmony with the universe. Because it's made in a certain way. And I think from my architectural training, I understand, you know, if you have a structure, this is the way it works. It's not as if you can say, well, I'd rather live on the roof of the house. No, it's made so that you go through the hallway and you go up the stairs and you go to the different rooms and you use the different rooms in different ways. That's how it's made. So you can argue with me as much as you like about the universe, but this is the way it's made. And what we're meant to do, what we're meant to do now is learn this system so that we can live in harmony with it. And I say now, but this teaching has been going on. What was Abraham saying? He was saying everything's in oneness. Everything is oneness. Everything is in harmony. There's nothing separate from anything else. It's all connected and it's all one. That's how he can say it. There's one God. It's not as if there's different idols that you can worship or anything. It's all oneness. So this is the spiritual path that we're on. This is what we're being taught actually by God. I mean, the prophets have been giving this information to us. It's the prophets who've been relating to God and giving Judaism the information. and Jews have shared it with the rest of the world.
I was just going to say, people, you know, sometimes you get the expression that how people say it's like, you know, come into the world and there's no owner's manual. But there is.
Yeah, it's inside you, right? Right. Okay, so there any more questions about that? That God is giving us the wealth? God is giving us this information? Okay, let's go to the next one. We'll go back to this in a minute. Okay, the yellow sheet. But I wanted to take a moment to look at what Simon Jacobson says in the green sheet. So we're back with charity. Why are we giving charity? Charity enables us to spiritualize the material and to actualize our virtuous intentions. Sounds so good, doesn't it? God could have easily distributed wealth evenly to all people, but as the sages say, if everyone were wealthy or poor, who would be generous? So there's something in that. If everybody has the same thing, then we don't need each other. We don't need a relationship with each other. We don't need to connect with each other. And there's something about needing each other. We're made in a way that we need each other. Remember, the money you give away is not your own. God has lent it to you to allow you the gift of giving. Those who have been blessed with more money then are those who have been blessed by God with the opportunity and privilege to be more giving, to be more godlike. It's in the Midrash. So charity must be given with humility. If a wealthy person gives arrogantly, thinking that he is doing a great favor, he is sadly mistaken. The favor is being done to him. Recognizing this fact makes the act of giving charity that much more compelling.
Mm, so he's blessed that he's in a position to be able to give.
There you go.
Right.
And it's also that when we give something, when we give a gift or we give money, we get pleasure out of it. When you give a present to somebody, don't you feel good? So God's giving us the opportunity to feel joy. That's really amazing.
I think it's Simon Jacobson. I don't know if someone said that very much. I think it was Simon Jacobson.
He was good.
Out, you know, like you said before, you know, we all hear all our life that we're unique, but if you look, and playing devil's advocate, he says, if you look, people really have basically the same needs. We're not so unique in our needs.
Right.
Really, where we're unique is when we give. When we see, we're not so unique. We see pretty much similarly.
That's good, yeah.
How we give,
That's
where we really express and experience our uniqueness.
That's very good. That's very good. Okay. So, after all, God created the universe as an intricate system of give and take. Our entire existence revolves around this relationship. Just as plants, for instance, need the carbon dioxide that humans exhale, humans need the oxygen that plants produce. Charity is yet one more expression of this pattern. The giver and the receiver need one another. More than the rich man does for the pauper, say the sages, the pauper does for the rich man. Now, I want to go back to that yellow sheet, to what Rabbi Pinson was saying. He says that charity that is given from the more fortunate to the less fortunate establishes a relationship between giver and receiver and ultimately reveals a deep bond between the two owners. Well, I thought this was interesting. The person who gives it away and the person who now has it in their possession. Tzedakah is generally the Hebrew word used for charity, though literally translated, it means doing what is right. Clearly, there is a marked distinction between giving charity and doing what is right. To be charitable is to assume that the money or belongings are yours and you are nice enough to give it away, to give away your money or possessions to others. Tzedakah means doing right, being aware that the money you are giving to the poor has been offered to you as a gift to be kept in your trust until you distribute it to its proper owner. This is what Shlomo said too. He always said that. That you're given the money, God gives people money and then expects them to give it to whoever needs it. Okay, so now let's get into the spiritual aspect more of money. And this is Rabbi Nachman, who knew a thing or two. He says, money has the ability to transfer spiritual energies from one physical item to another. Rabbi Nachman explains how every physical item has a spiritual essence which is behind its concrete manifestation. And I have to fill in here, everything is energy, right? Everything in the universe is energy. Scientists have told us everything is energy. Quantum mechanics says everything is particles of energy. We are condensed forms of energy. So everything is energy. The table is energy. The chairs are energy. The light is energy. Everything is energy. And so he's saying it's spiritual energy. It's not just energy. It's spiritual energy. I would go in further and say it's conscious energy. Because everything is energy, and everything is, there's nothing which is not God. And God is consciousness. So everything is conscious energy. So he's saying every physical item has a spiritual essence which is behind its concrete manifestation. That's what he's saying when he's saying that. Everything is energy, and it's spiritual energy. In addition to an item's own unique essence, it also contains a universal soul in common with all the other items in the physical creation. The universal soul is the divine soul, is God's soul. This is Rabbi Nachman, this is not me, I'm just explaining it. It also contains a universal soul in common with all the other items in the physical creation. This universal soul is rooted in the spiritual energies of wealth. This is why every physical item... So what he's saying is everything in the world has value. He's talking about wealth, and he's saying everything has value. And when we think of wealth, we think of people who have things of value, right? We have all this value. We go over this again. This is why every physical item, he says, has or is associated with a monetary value. When you give money, you're transferring energy. Money is a symbol for energy. It's something you trade. If you have money, you can buy something and get something physical for it. So you're trading money for an item. So it has energy, the energy of buying you things. Mm-hmm. And it has energy to help other people too. But when you give it as charity, you're giving money as a help for somebody. You know, you give it to the poor, you give it to homeless children, you give it to somebody who really needs it. Your money has the energy to help the children or help the poor. So that's the energy. So, and he's saying every physical item has a spiritual essence which is behind its concrete manifestation. He's saying everything has energy, and that energy is spiritual energy. When I give you 25 cents, you're 25 cents richer, all right? So I've given you energy. Yeah. When we speak to each other, we're transferring energy to each other. We're transferring conscious thought to each other. We're transferring energy of thought to each other. So it also contains a universal soul because it's part of the universe. And he's saying it contains a universal soul in common with all the other items in the physical creation. So he's saying everything has this energy. Everything has energy. And so he's talking about the universal soul is God. And this universal soul is rooted in the spiritual energies of wealth.
What does that mean? When something is rooted in something, that means it's the ground out of which it grows. At least that's the way I understand it.
Yeah, because God is really giving us the money. So God is giving us the money. The root is God.
But that's not what it's saying to me. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. It's saying the opposite. It's saying the universal soul. And I wonder if what they mean by universal soul is slightly different. I mean, I don't know who translated this, but I know it's in the capitalized universal soul. Mm. So I wonder if their understanding is slightly different. But whatever their understanding to me, the way I understand the sense, maybe I'm reading it wrong, but the way I understand the sense, whatever this universal soul is saying is rooted in spirituality as well. So that means that's the ground out of which this grows from. So it's saying the spiritual energies of wealth is the ground, sort of, right? I mean, a tree is rooted in the ground. It's growing out of the ground.
Yeah, but this spiritual energy of wealth is what it can do. What it can do for others. It's not, or what it can do for you or me. You know, if we have money, the spiritual energy of the wealth is what we can do with it. It's not just money per se, you know, it's not just coins or dollars or whatever. It's what it can do. That's the spiritual energy of wealth. What it can do for you. I could buy a mansion if I have enough money, if I have enough wealth. I could buy a car, I could buy an airplane, you know, I could buy anything if I have. Because the energy of the money is such that I'll give it to somebody else and they say, oh, okay, I'll sell you that because you got the money. All right? And the universal soul is that God has given us the world in such a way that there is spiritual energy in the wealth. That's what it is. And he's saying that is why every physical item has or is associated with a monetary value. All right, let's move on, and maybe it'll help you to understand it more clearly. Basically, spiritual understanding. Proverbs says, one that pursues charity and generosity finds life, righteousness, and honor. So this is the idea. Now, why do you think that is? Money is a form of energy, as we've said, and it can affect us in so many different ways. It also affects how we behave. Because we're part of an infinite field of creative energy, and I mentioned this before, we live within this energy as individual forms of creative energy. When we link our creative energy with that of the infinite field of energy, we come into the flow of its unifying harmony. We become part of the process, the flow of relationship, of money, of life, of joy, of everything. So the universe is a harmonious interaction of all the elements within it, constantly in motion and circulating all its parts. And money is a symbol of that energy flowing throughout the human environment. When we, and the flowing throughout the human environment is the most important part in this. When we learn to live in the flow of this money, and we learn to give what's needed, we're in the flow of this money, and we allow space for money to come back to us, because we're keeping the flow going. If we block the flow by not giving, by being afraid of what we have, of holding on to what we have, we stop the flow. This is the most important thing to understand. that there is a flow of all the money in the world, like there's a flow of all the energy in the world, and we've shown where Judaism says very clearly, money is energy. You know, Rabbi Nachman's talking about it. Money is energy. We transmit this energy. We relate to money either as something we hoard or something we can share with others, and we can use it to buy what's necessary. When we live in the flow of this money, we give money and we receive money.
Well, that's the whole thing about the tithing.
Right.
It's meant to set that thing in motion.
Right, that's part of it. But also giving charity. You know, I've been telling you before about the need for charity. It's all in there. That's the way the world works. So we have to get into our minds the understanding that there is a flow of energy in the universe, and there is a flow of the energy of money in the universe. And when we hold on to the money and we don't share it, or not just money, if we don't give, it's part of us. It's are we sharing what we have, what we know, what we understand? Are we concerned about others? Are we relating to others? When we put into the world, we get back from the world. And if we don't put into the world, we don't get it back. You know, if you're uptight and you're angry, and I know no one here is like that, but if you're uptight and you're angry and you don't want to know, and you find people like that will say, I don't know why everyone's so angry. But they're the ones who are angry. They're holding on to their anger, and so they're not getting the flow. People are giving them a hard time because they're giving everyone else a hard time. What you put out does come back to you. But with money, it's important to understand this, because it's hard to think that, what's money? It's a solid coin, or it's a dollar bill or whatever. But when you put it out into the world, you're starting that flow of energy.
The whole cycle. Yeah.
That can then come back to you. If you're afraid of money, you're giving it too much importance and you're not understanding the spirituality of it. So, one way or another, there has to be giving, there has to be letting go of the need, interestingly enough, of controlling money. To understand, if something costs a little bit more, you don't fight, you don't argue with people. If that's how much it costs, that's how much it costs. Just go with the flow of it. It will come back to you. If you go with the flow will come back to you. Isn't that nice? So it's something a lot of people don't understand. I've seen people so upset over 25 cents or a dollar. Hey, you've got it. Don't fight it. You know, someone overcharged. You can obviously speak up if someone overcharges you, but don't take it to heart. Understand it's all in the flow. And that's the hardest thing for people to understand a lot of time. So you have to keep it flowing.
It's having a generosity of spirit.
That's it.
It's your spirit.
Yes. Right. It is.
So it gets translated in all different ways.
All right. So, yes, you're right. Absolutely. So our intention is the key. When we give with compassion and respect, we can experience compassion and respect in the world. So we have to also express gratitude for everything we do receive, because we're in the flow, and understanding that the universe, or we can say here God, is giving us what we need, we have to express gratitude for it. It's not just from another person, understanding that you're in this flow and God has arranged it. So that what I'm getting from all of this is the healthiest relationships are those where we give and take. So we have to know how to give and we have to know how to receive. That's something my mother told me very clearly. Because people have these strange ideas about marriage. And I had a teacher who actually said, you know, it's always one person gives and the other one takes. And she said, and this teacher was saying that, but my mother said, no, you each give and you each take. You have to know when to give and when to receive and allow the other person to give to you. And it's all in this flow of, you know, if you want to be in the flow of a relationship, you have to know when to give and you have to know when to receive, you know. And someone is saying, here, I'm giving you this, even in a friendship. Don't say no to it. You know, they're giving you something really nice and you have to be able to receive it. Gracious about it, yeah. When you understand that God is always present, there's not a moment where God isn't. I mean, God's with all of us right now, present within each one of us, and beyond us, around us, and beyond us, and in everything else that's going on all the time, and is totally conscious of everything all the time. So we can each ask God for what we need.